All right. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Massive Breakdown Podcast. This time it is episode 20, which means we are wrapping up 5 full months of doing the Massive Breakdown Podcast. It is a milestone that I never thought I'd hit, but it is very, very incredible. We're also closing in on 30,000 total plays, which is just amazing, amazing that you guys have been there supporting us. And I am, as always, your host, Mercury, is joined today by NK Cougar and Kit Kutcha. We have a fantastic discussion about anti-meta weapons. So I know we talked a little bit a couple weeks ago about the shotgun meta, playing within it, but we figured we could dive a whole lot deeper into some things. Primary weapons, special weapons, just stuff that you don't normally see in the Crucible, but there's still a ton of fun to play with. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing today? How are you doing, Kutcha?
I'm surviving. It's been a kind of a crazy weekend. My wife sprained her ankle, my back's acting up, but man, I'm still excited to be here. I had a ton of fun in Destiny the last week. Got some scrims practice in. I've been playing in some of the practice rounds for the Crucible Radio scrim league with my pal Smiley Jersey over there. So shout out to him for sending me the invite, getting me involved there. And I'm psyched to talk about primary weapons tonight. So can't complain. How about you, Cougar?
As usual, I'm doing better than I deserve. That's about all I can say about it.
All right, very cool. Well, we got this, the idea for this episode actually from a video that was posted up on Planet Destiny. Some of you guys may have seen it. I know that we just recently got one of our first podcast episodes put on their YouTube channel, and pretty shortly after that, the Black Link posted a very cool video talking about anti-meta weapons. And we originally had something else planned, but we thought, you know, that is a fantastic idea. We started discussing it ourselves, just offering opinions about it, and we realized we had a ton to say. And we just thought that the podcast format, being that it's almost always an hour long, would be a great place to discuss it. So we're going to hop right in. It is our main topic today. We're going to be focusing almost solely on that. And basically, we have a lot of experience playing off meta. Because we've all been around for a decent amount of time, we've seen the metas kind of shift. And every once in a while, the meta shifts in a direction that you're not necessarily used to, and you stick with a gun that's not meta anymore, and you see how it plays. Then you try other things. Maybe you don't like the meta, maybe you don't enjoy what it is, but you really just want to try other things. And I personally do that all the time, mostly because I spend a lot of time testing weapons in the Crucible, because I do reviews and I need to do stats and everything like that, so I got to play with all the guns to figure out how they are. But the very first thing that I want to talk about, something you all probably heard a million times, it's the high-impact scouts. Anyone who's listened to this Massive Breakdown podcast series knows that I harp on about high-impact scouts and how amazing they are, because they kill so, so fast, and getting a perfect 3-tap headshot on someone is one of the cleanest, best feelings in the Crucible. I absolutely love it. But anyone who has heard me harp on about it also knows the drawback is they're incredibly unforgiving. Incredibly unforgiving. If you start hitting body shots and you're not hitting your headshots, 1.60 seconds is one of the slowest body shot times to kill in the game. It's not good. It's not competitive. Basically, if you miss a shot, you're probably going to lose, is the way it ends up working. So enter with Rise of Iron, the Chaos Dogma, the Wrath of the Machine Raid Scout Rifle, and the very first anti-meta weapon I want to talk about. It basically gives you the optimal time to kill of a normal high-impact scout, 0.8 seconds, but it only requires 2 headshots and 1 body shot, because it has a barrel perk that increases impact, and that's amazing, because not only does it only require 2 headshots and 1 body shot, but it only needs 4 body shots to kill instead of 5, which drops the body shot time to kill from 1.60 seconds to 1.20 seconds, which is very, very competitive. For comparison, that is actually faster than the Grasp of Malak. It is faster than the Clever Dragon in terms of body shot times to kill. Now, drawbacks, it has god-awful stability. You basically can't get worse stability than that. And if you want to help it out even a little bit, you need to use small bore, which means your magazine size is down at 10. It is really, truly a struggle to learn to control it, and the reticle jumps all over the place. And the worst thing that happens is when you're in mid reticle jump and you get hit by a burst from the Clever Dragon, you basically lose it, which is unfortunate. But once you learn how to deal with it, is a fantastic gun to play with. I've got a bunch of kids in the clan that I run with using it, because that 3-shot kill is just the best feeling in the game. And it's even better because it gives you a little auditory cue when it procs the triple double or a triple tap and triple double perks on the gun, and the gun lights up and everything. It's beautiful. So that's my first anti-meta weapon that I wanted to talk about. The Chaos Dogma. Give it a shot for yourself. Definitely try it out. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think you definitely nailed that one on the head. That's one that really stands out. Some of these raid weapons have some really impressive perk combinations and some abilities that, you know, you don't see on other guns. And I think it's nice that we have raid weapons that are worth chasing. So I'm glad you brought that one up and excited that you mentioned it.
What about you, Cougar? Got anything to add?
I think you covered it pretty well. I think the ability to get two headshots and one body shot is huge.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. It is my main gun in the Crucible right now. I use it all the time. Now, would I take it into sweats? Would I take it into trials? Depends how confident you are with the gun. I myself, yeah, I played some more competitive matches with it because I really do feel it's a great gun, but it's got a very steep learning curve because of the lack of stability. I don't necessarily know that I would want to go up against a very skilled player using a palindrome or something like that, because they're going to be all over the place. They're going to be closing on you, and it is not the greatest gun at close range. If you practice hard, you can kind of get the headshot melee combo down. Or the body shot melee combo, depending on whether you've got charged melee or not, that might be able to kill him. But yeah, so I guess that's my first. I was originally going to talk about the entire high impact archetype because we kind of wanted to do specific archetype discussions, but I've talked about the high impact scouts so many damn times on this podcast that it's not even worth going over all of them again. The Chaos Dogma is just new, shiny, and I wanted to put that one out there because I don't know if I've discussed it much. So what archetypes do you guys want to talk about?
Well, so I want to jump in real quick, and Cougar, I know you're going to have something to say about high-impact hand cannons, but I want to take just a second to mention some of the low-impact hand cannons, specifically the Waterstar and Stolen Pride. So if you're familiar with the low-impact hand cannons, you know that they actually... Well, they've got an incredible time to kill, right? 0.8 seconds, one of the fastest times to kill in the game, faster than mid-impact hand cannons. Their body shot time to kill is 1.2, just like the high-impact scouts we were just talking about. So they've got very, very fast time to kill. The problem with these low-impact hand cannons is that their range is crap, I guess is the kindest way to put it. So it makes them extremely difficult to use. That's countered by generally having extremely high aim assist, in most cases, not all cases, but it doesn't do you a lot of good when you just don't have the range. So the nice thing about those two guns in particular, and those are the Waterstar from Taken King Trials of Osiris, so if you don't have that one, you missed out, and I am sorry for you, because I love mine. But Stolen Pride, House of Judgment, that's still available, so you can still chase that one. So that's got a base range of 25, which is not great for a hand cannon, but it's actually exactly the same as a lot of the mid-impact hand cannons, including guns like Byronic Hero, the Devil You Know. So it is, you know, not completely outside the realm of competitiveness with them in terms of range. And then it can also get max... one of the max range perks and range finder, which pushes your effective range up into the 40s. Totally doable, especially on a close range map. And if you can take advantage of that two crit, one body time to kill, you are going to be making some people very, very sad. So that's my archetype that I want to, I guess, bring the light first here, because I really love those guns. When you're able to get in up close and use them on people, they're so hard to fight.
You can get the Waterstar, as you can get all of the Taken King Trials weapons from the gold package of Trials of Osiris. The current gold package will drop Taken King Trials weapons.
My mistake. So you are not out of luck. Chase away. It's totally worth having.
And I enjoy the low impact hand cannon class. It's not necessarily my favorite. I always find that the fact that I have to hit two crits in one body compared to one crit in two body is just a little bit more difficult in, you know, clutch situations. It allows for a little bit less of a willingness to go up in the air and try to hit people, because when I'm jumping around with a palindrome or something, if I've already hit a headshot, I don't really have to worry about where my other shots are going to go. I just point at the body and fire away, and I'm good to go. With the low impacts, it's a little bit different. So what I started doing with the low impacts is actually the opposite of trying to max range. Because the way I looked at it was I was like, you know, even if I max range on one of these guns, and I'm not talking about the Waterstar specifically here. For my test, I used, I believe, the Revenant or the Revelator. That's what it is, which I was getting a whole lot back before Rise of Iron dropped. And I used a Down and Doubt. And both of those have just got all for range to begin with. So I figured, you know, the range is going to be garbage on them no matter what I do. It doesn't matter whether I get rifle barrel. It doesn't matter whether I get rangefinder. They're never going to have competitive range with the mid impact. So I was like, why don't I do the other thing? Why don't I not care about range, max stability, and then just spam the shit out of the trigger the entire time at close range? Basically use it like a poor man's last word. Now, you're not going to quite have the rate of fire of the last word, but I found that it was a passable substitute. If I didn't want to use an exotic in my primary slot, maybe I wanted to use truth or something like that. Or a lot of times I was playing with the Trespasser too for those double close range guns, and just max stability and fire away as fast as you basically can. And you'll find that up close, as long as you're within the optimal range, you're not really going to suffer from those ghost bullets that much. And these guns almost across the board for the archetype come with absurd aim assist. And you will find that it's just magnetizing bullets to people's heads when you barely think you're even hitting them. And it actually made it kind of easy, considering how little I was aiming, to maintain the maximum rate of fire, get that optimal time to kill. The only issue I had with it is, obviously, just don't even try to compete with people close range, because it's not going to work for you.
So just as a frame of reference on that aim assist, the Palindrome, everybody's favorite hand cannon right now, has an aim assist of 70 at base. And the Waterstar, which is pretty typical for the class, has a base aim assist of 90. So they're starting out a full 20 points ahead in terms of aim assist. So when you're within that effective range, you are, like you said, Mercules, it's the bullets, you could practically curve them around the corner. They're so accurate. So
yeah, it feels like the Mida, basically. You know those shots where you shoot someone the Mida and you swore they made it behind the corner, but they die anyways? You can do that with these hand cannons, and it's pretty fun. And again, you know, I want to stress that these aren't necessarily the most competitive weapons, but that's not the point of this. Anti-meta weapons are for fun, they're for enjoyment, they're playing because you want to try something new, you want to test your hand, maybe you want to handicap yourself a little bit, maybe you're just bored with the way things are going and you want to hop into it. And, you know, there's a difference between doing that, I want to stress, and then playing with something like, I don't know, a high impact, an Apple of Discord or something, or like a Herja D, like playing with a gun that you're actually handicapping yourself. Those guns, they're not quite as much fun for me because I really notice the difference. You know, these guns, anti-meta, they're just right outside of it. They're very, very good. They have some really good qualities about them, but maybe the ease of use is a little bit less. And you know, we've talked about that before, the difference between time to kill and ease of use, and where those two meet on a graph kind of determines what the meta weapons are. These guns might have great time to kill, and the ease of use might be just a little bit under some of the meta weapons. And that's all we're saying here. I just want to stress that, because I feel like I didn't clarify that enough in the beginning, exactly what it is we're trying to go for here.
Absolutely. I was going to say the two archetypes we've talked about so far are actually perfect examples of that. That graph and how these weapons kind of fall on it. You know, you've got the high impact scouts, which like you said, extremely effective, more difficult to use. And then the low impact hand cannons can be extremely effective, but again, they've got some limitations that make them a lot more difficult to use or a lot more specialized.
Didn't you want to talk about low impact auto rifles, Scotch?
I did. Absolutely. So low impact auto rifles, people who've been playing the game for longer than a couple of months will remember, dominated the meta at the beginning of this year, the spring. They were huge. They were everywhere. And they've essentially dropped off the map. If you go and you look at like top 10 guns by percentage of all kills in basically any game mode in the Crucible for the last month, much less the last 2 weeks, which you're seeing the return of some guns we haven't seen in the meta in a while. Low-impact auto rifles are gone. Now, for reference, what I'm talking about here, there's actually quite a few now. So let me pull up the full list. We've got the Arminius D, Doctrine of Passing, Soulstealer's Claw is the ones that have been around for a while. Then we've got the Assembly 2 from New Monarchy, the Unbent Tree from Iron Banner, and the Hexcaster Arc from the Crucible. So quite a few different options there. My preference generally from those was the Soul Stealer's Claw, and I think it probably still remains, in my opinion, the best of the class, just due to the combination of stability, aim assist, and base range. But that aside, I mean, any of those guns can be very effective if used as a defensive tool. At this point, they can't really compete with the pulse rifles and hand cannons that are so good for dodging in and out of cover. You know, the weakness of these guns is that you have to commit to the firefight, right? They're very low damage per bullet. Absolutely. And that is killer. You know, when you're forced to stand in the open to do any kind of serious damage to somebody, that exposes you to so many angles. So really, what these guns are great for is running alongside a sniper and, you know, taking those shots. And when somebody tries to push on your location, then you, you know, you crouch down, you set yourself up, and you just, you wait for them to come around that corner and you just hose them down. So they're a ton of fun when you pull that off, and it's really not that hard to do. But patience is the key. This is no longer a gun that you can charge in with. You know, that was the case for a while, but you cannot do it now. You will just get decimated.
Yeah, I've found great success pairing them with a fusion rifle like Saladin's Vigil or Thesen or something like that in Supremacy, because people are oh so willing to come charging straight out of cover, running at you full speed, trying to charge you with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And last week when we talked about shotguns, we said one of the ways to counter them was to play weapons that counter them. Low impact, high rate of fire, auto rifles, and fusion rifles both counter shotguns amazingly, amazingly well.
Absolutely.
The point of a shotgunner is that they can't shoot you while they're running. They are giving you a period of time from when they break cover to when they get to you, they aren't shooting. All they're doing is moving. You literally have an uncontested shot. Now, they're going to be trying to avoid your shots, that's for sure. But you are given the time to charge up a fusion rifle bolt or to unload some body shots into someone. And like you said, it's not, these aren't aggressive guns. You're not running around charging someone with a Soul Stealer's Claw. You're putting bullets into a target that's moving towards you when they can't fire back, basically. They're perfect against shotgunners. Now, the problem with that is if your positioning is bad, you're just quite simply not going to kill them before they get to you. A good shotgunner is going to close very, very rapidly.
Yep.
That's why the back pedal is so important. That's why priming with grenades is so important. You want to do everything you can to make someone die as quickly as possible. And these guns are great for it. They're easy to use at close range. You know, scout rifles and pulse rifles aren't always the easiest when a shotgunner is charging straight at you and they're moving around, they're twilight garrisoning through the air, they're shade stepping. It's not always easy to follow a shotgunner at close range with those two weapons. But with a Soul Stealer's Claw or the Assembly 2 from New Monarchy, which, by the way, has a fantastic roll right out of the gate, counterbalance and perfect balance, basically the two best perks you can get for that gun, it's really easy to track at close range. So I highly, highly recommend those guns in a game mode like Supremacy, where maybe running a sniper isn't exactly the easiest way to counter shotguns because you're not going to be helping your team out too much if you do that. You can still play up with your team, but you can take down those charging shotguns before they get to you. That's how I like to do it. And I run it with a Night Stalker, and it's fantastic. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. One thing to kind of add on to that, so you mentioned, you know, how difficult it can be to land shots on a charging, sliding shotgunner with a pulse rifle or some of the other really popular primary guns. So one of the nice things about these auto rifles against a charging player, regardless of what weapon they're using, but, you know, presumably a shotgun, is that constant damage. So with a pulse rifle, right, you're dealing damage in pulses. Each one of those does a lot of damage. So when you're using cover effectively at range, you're using your time very effectively. When you're exposed for that brief second, you do a whole bunch of damage, and then you take cover again. But when you're taking somebody down who's charging you, that's not what you want to do. You want to do as much damage as possible over the entire period of the time that they're exposed. And so the nice thing there is that this can be a really good gun for team shotting and collecting assists. To a certain extent, you know, for a while, auto rifles in year one after the great auto rifle nerfs of year one were kind of known jokingly as assist rifles. And to a certain extent, I think that could be said to come back at this point, but not necessarily in a bad way. They're really great for tagging groups of people, which collects a lot of points for your team. And they're also really great, you know, when somebody charges you with that shotgun, you're hosing them down the entire time. There's no delay. You're not leaving them with a third of their health. You're leaving them with a sliver of health, and anybody who breathes on them is going to take them the heck down and avenge you, you know, if they do get in there. And then that will happen. You'll lose some of those fights. So you're really setting your teammates up in a great way, which I think is probably the last point I had about the low impacts. And, you know, all that I could really say in their favor. You know, we've covered their weaknesses. They're not meta, but you know that's what you can use them for. So, would you, Cougar? You haven't spoken up on these guns. You know, you used to be a pretty heavy user of them, at least for a while. What's your take?
I did use them fairly frequently for a while, and they definitely have fallen out of favor. I think that's mostly because of people realizing that maintaining line of sight during an engagement usually ends poorly. They haven't really had too many huge changes since then. They had their effective range cut down a little bit. That's really it. You know, they're a very good backup weapon. If you have that 102 auto rifle, it is your backup. It's playing second fiddle to whatever your special weapon is. So it needs to be treated as such when you have it. Don't expect it to win you gunfights outside of the extreme close range. If you can keep that in mind, you can play to its strengths and it will serve you very, very well. But if you forget that and you try to take that mid-range gunfight with some pulse rifle or a Mida, you know, you're going to have very poor games. You have got to play to the strengths of the max rate of fire auto rifles or you will fail miserably.
I can actually testify to that personally. Just remembered, I've been working on my Thorn Bounty, Cougar. I know you'd be happy to hear that. Really trying to get that year 3 Thorn, and so I've been running around the Crucible with my Atheon's Epilogue and my Void Felwinter's Lie, just to take it all back to year 1. And so I mean, it's really a shotgun primary game type, and then I pull out the Epilogue when I have to cross an open area or when I can't use cover to my advantage. So that's absolutely true. You know, I found when I was relying too heavily on the Epilogue, I suffered quite a bit. So, and anyone who doubts that, try it yourself and you'll you'll learn the truth of it. Absolutely.
And if we don't have anything else to say about low impact ARs, I just have one other auto rifle that I want to bring up. It's the Monte Carlo, actually. And the Monte Carlo has apparently seen a rise in popularity recently. We were looking at the numbers earlier. It's actually a top 10 weapon in, I believe, Clash or something over the last month or the last 2 weeks.
Clash, Control, and Skirmish that I've checked. I haven't looked any further than that. But yeah, it's across the board. It's all over the place, man. People love it.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, and there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, stats across the board, absolutely fantastic. Great recoil direction, amazing range, especially considering it's one of the mid-impacts and not the high-impacts.
Oh, wow.
Amazing stability, really fast reload speed, recharges your melee with every time you do damage, has a chance to fully recharge it after you do a kill. I mean, for Stormcallers, for Gunslingers, for anyone who's heavily reliant on a melee, it's an amazing, amazing weapon. And the problem with mid-impact ARs isn't really that their optimal time to kill is bad, it's that they lose their optimal time to kill so quickly. It's that their optimal range is so short that on top of having to stay in line of sight to engage people, you're actually, as soon as that damage drop-off starts, your optimal time to kill is out the window, and now you're slower down in a second. But because the Monte Carlo's range is so high, it actually keeps that optimal time to kill much, much farther than most mid-impact, actually than any mid-impact ARs do at all. Like, insanely far. It's not even comparable to something like an awful Red Spectre or something like that. It's just ridiculous how far out it keeps that optimal time to kill. It's an amazing weapon. It's fantastic. It's so easy to use, so forgiving. I definitely have to recommend anyone who wants to play with an AR and has kind of been struggling to use any of the other ones, maybe finds that the low impact ones just aren't precise enough, definitely try running with the Monte Carlo. And it's gorgeous too.
It is. It's a good looking gun.
Agree 100%.
To add some numbers there for reference, so mid-impact auto rifles, I'm looking at the list right now, And the best range you can get out of the box, the absolute best, comes on the Extremophile from Dead Orbit, and that's 27 base range. That's the absolute best you can do. Oh, I'm sorry, I apologize, I'm wrong. Vision Stone, Trials of Osiris, how did I miss it? 31. So that's fantastic base range for a mid-impact auto rifle. Monte Carlo laughs at that. It's got 46 range out of the box. 46. It's a full 15 points ahead of the best legendary. So that's, not even a comparison. So, just, kind of take that for what it's worth. But that range plays such a big part, like you said, Mercules, and what makes some of those guns harder to use. That's what makes it really stand out compared to all these legendary auto rifles. But it's not just that, right? It doesn't stop there. It doesn't just have the most ridiculous range. It also has better stability than half of the legendaries by a good chunk, and it's at least competitive stability-wise with all of the other legendary mid-impact auto rifles. And then you add on top of that, it also has the third best reload speed. It's got decent mag size at 36 rounds. Its aim assist is right middle of the road at 50. Recoil direction, you already mentioned, it's 80. That's the best of all of the mid-impact auto rifles. It's better than any other mid-impact auto rifle in the game. I compared it earlier to the Vision Stone, right, with as far as range goes, but the Vision Stone's recoil direction is sideways. It's awful. To find comparable recoil direction, you've got to go to the Zarania D from the Gunsmith, which actually is probably one of the best stat-wise legendary mid-impact auto rifles with 25 range and 70 recoil direction. But the Zarania can't compete on the other stats, right? Its reload speed is slower, its stability is lower. So the Monte Carlo, absolutely worth your time. And that exotic perk, wow. That's fantastic.
Just a quick note for you guys who have been here since year one. You probably remember in year one auto rifles being a lot easier to control in general. And that's because the year one auto rifles almost exclusively had recoil directions of 70 or higher, nearly across the board. And when year two rolled around and auto rifles had been king for a little while, they decided that the new auto rifles wouldn't be as easy to control. And so you started getting recoil directions like 40 and 55, and that's why they have all that sideways movement that wasn't there in year one. And so that's why counterbalance became like a necessary perk on a lot of auto rifles starting in year two. And before, counterbalance wasn't really necessary. But the Monte Carlo absolutely has that year one recoil pattern, almost completely vertical, just so easy to control, especially with the high base stability. And like you mentioned for the Zarania, whatever it is, it also has a high recoil direction of 70. So if you guys are looking for a gun that doesn't necessarily need counterbalance, it's got to be a legendary, that would be your one right there. Because it feels like a year one gun when you're firing it. As opposed to something like the Suros ARI 41, which feels very much like one of the year two auto rifles. It hops a lot to the left when you're firing it, pulls a lot, and it's a lot less fun to play with a gun that's got an awful recoil pattern like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess probably not much more to say about that one, but there's one other exotic that kind of blows my mind. Mercules and I were talking about this earlier. I'm seeing it on all the top 10 lists. He's seeing it in all the games he's playing, so I guess he's playing better people than me. This is a gun that I have never used in a Crucible match, and I guess maybe I need to fix that, and that is No Land Beyond. No Land Beyond is cropping up on top 10 lists from Clash to Control to Skirmish as far as percentage of all kills. This is, of course, the primary sniper, and I don't know, Mercules, Cougar, you guys are both going to be better snipers than me just by default. Do you guys have any thoughts as far as why this gun is making this sudden climb the last 2 weeks?
Mercules, I know you had a really good theory on that. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, for me, it was because I noticed when I was playing with it a lot. Well, the first thing that I think happened, that I think sparked this, is a lot of times you'll see a streamer play with a gun and do very, very well with it. And if it's a very popular streamer, a lot of people will be watching that and they'll say, oh, that guy was dominating with it, let me try it out myself. Well, the thing is, and some people have known this for a very, very long time, but the No Land Beyond is actually a very good gun. Once you learn how to do the sprint cancel for the animation that takes a lot of time, it's actually a really good gun. It's got a low zoom scope, but it's got all the power of a sniper rifle. And in my experience, it doesn't flinch quite like normal sniper rifles. I don't know if it's something about the fact that it does have a low zoom scope, and the flinch on snipers a lot of the times is visual more so than is actually the gun being thrown off target. But it just seems like, especially with the current meta leaning the way it is, with clever dragons with high caliber rounds as far as the eye can see, the No Land Beyonds can just eat rounds to the head and still put out an accurate downrange shot and just absolutely dome someone. They're really, really great for under pressure attacks. And those are the things that I think have combined, that people saw someone very, very good using them and dominating with them, and they thought, hey, I'm going to try this out too. And then they tried it on, they're like, wow, this is actually pretty nice. Now, it is a steep learning curve. I'm not going to say that you can just take a No Land Beyond out into the Crucible and dominate, because it's probably not the way it works. It takes a little bit of time to get that sprint cancel animation down. And it's a little weird the first couple of times you use No Land Beyond. You've really got to get used to the sight picture and putting the reticle right on the head, looking for the little red dot that appears when you see someone's dome is perfectly in, and then pulling the trigger. Those are the two things that I think have contributed to it. But honestly, you know, it's also just a really fun gun to play with. And it's one of those things that you can't get mad when someone kills you with a No Land Beyond. Like, you get headshot with a No Land Beyond, and it used to be, you know, you'd get headshot by a longbow synthesis before the nerf, and you'd be like, oh, it was aim assist, or oh, it was this, or oh, it was that. You get headshot with a No Land Beyond, all you gotta do is shake your head and clap a little bit for him, because he just killed you with, you know, a bolt action sniper rifle, and we're all supposed to be space wizards up in here. So it's one of the things that I've been noticing a lot of in the Crucible, and I'm not really upset with it. It can be a rage inducing gun to be killed by, but it's fun to play against. It's fun to play with too. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, can't really add anything to that. It's one of those guns I've always wished that I could figure out, and I've just never. Sniping's not one of those skills that I guess came to me in my younger gaming days, and so it's not something that I've really worked on a whole lot since then. But you know, maybe I'll give it another try here. I just picked one up because we were talking about playing a for fun, you know, match made game with it, and so maybe I'll have to practice a little bit, get my NLB skills up.
It does have it's got probably the steepest learning curve in the game, worse than a regular sniper rifle by far, as in learning to get used to it. It takes a lot of time and a lot of practice to get good with. I've pulled a No Land Beyond out probably 5 or 6 times now, usually just having fun running with some buddies, and I can see how certain players are incredible with it. Once you click with a No Land Beyond, it's like riding a bike. Once you click with that No Land Beyond, you've got it. You know how to use it, and you can learn how to quick scope. You can learn how to use evasive abilities like Shade Step and come up sniping. I actually got killed today in a trials run by someone who Shade Stepped, came up scoped in, and domed me out of my own Shade Step. I mean, some of these people are just nuts with this gun. And, you know, I think that's okay. It has the steepest learning curve in the game. There's not many people who can use it at that level. You know, it's the inverse of the universal remote, which is a very easy to use primary special weapon, as much sense as that makes. The universal remote is in almost all ways the opposite of that No Land, especially after the most recent nerf that made it fairly, I wouldn't say ineffective, but definitely toned it down quite a bit. You know, that No Land can be highly effective. It can revive snipe now. It can do everything except super snipe. So it's definitely, I guess, I wouldn't say underrated, but very much underused underutilized.
It's one of those guns that has a very low floor. If you're bad with the No Land Beyond, you're going to be very bad with the No Land Beyond. And if you're good with the No Land Beyond, you're going to be very good. It's a low floor, a high ceiling. It's what we've talked about a lot of different times in this podcast. It's a high-risk, high-reward weapon. And you've probably seen a common theme, a recurring theme, with each one of these guns that we talk about. They all tend to offer pretty high rewards or have really great ease of use, but a lot of times they don't have both of them. The No Land Beyond does not have high ease of use, but it has really high reward. Hence, it's kind of a little bit off meta. You know, we've discussed this before, and you'll hear us harping on this all the time, but we're just trying to show it to you guys so you guys understand. And when it comes down to it, you know, next time a patch comes out, you'll be able to look at the patch notes and think, you know, I bet this is going to be the new meta. Because what gun looks like it's going to be the easiest to use with the highest reward? Where's that? Where are those two things going to intersect for all the guns, you know?
So, I would like to jump in real quick. We have talked about several guns, you know, throughout this episode, and I wanted to put out a quick list of where you can get these weapons. Just to let people know how they can get this. You mentioned for auto rifles, the low impact, the Soul Stealer's Claws from Prison of Elders. The New Monarchy auto rifle is, I would hope, obviously, at the New Monarchy vendor. For hand cannons, the Water Star comes from Gold Tier Trials of Osiris packages. Kit, what was the other low impact hand cannon? The Stolen Pride?
Yep, it was the House of Judgment.
That one comes from ranking up with Varix. You do Challenge of the Elders or Prison of Elders runs until you rank up. Then, let's see, the Chaos Dogma is from the Raid. Mercules, did you talk about another high-impact scout?
No, that was the only one I mentioned today.
All right. When we went over our archetype series and we discussed the high-impact scout rifles, the best at that time, this was before the Chaos Dogma, was the Badger CCL. It has the best base stats and best aim assist out of all of the high-impact scouts that can be earned through Vanguard packages. Let's see. Oh, one more thing. Last thing. There is one more low-impact hand cannon that I think everybody needs to keep an eye out for. This is legendary. It is the Gunsmith Kumakatak. It's an Omalon hand cannon with a maximum range of 39 with rifled barrel. Like all Omalon hand cannons, this does have the potential and has in fact done it before. You can get Icarus, Luck in the Chamber, and rifled barrel and have them obviously all equipped at the same time. So, actually last week, we were a week too late. Last week the gunsmith sold the Kumakatak.
Yeah. That's right, yeah, he did.
But I just wanted to run through that so that anybody listening to this episode who wanted to get a hold of one of these guns would know where to get it.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for putting that together, Cougar.
All right, so that's probably pretty much it in terms of primary weapons. Now, I know moving over to special weapons, we had a couple things. For anyone who plays the game, you know that shotguns are meta, so we don't really need to talk too much about shotguns, even though there are some archetypes, you know, in shotguns that don't see as much love. But we've heard enough about those. Sidearms, fusion rifles, sniper rifles as a whole, I wouldn't necessarily call them anti-meta because they still serve a very defined purpose, a very defined role. It's a minimized role compared to what it was. But I think fusion rifles and sidearms right now are really where it's at in terms of the anti-meta movement. Although Voop Nation represent, they're not such a small crowd anymore. They seem to be standing out a little bit more. Yeah, and it's very good. If you don't have yourself a well-rolled Vigil, or even a poorly rolled Vigil, because they're all dominant, it is an amazing gun. The fastest charging, four-bolt killing fusion rifle in the game. Great base range, great base stability. Go get yourself one if you have to grind Archon's Forge. It doesn't matter how. Even if you don't like fusion rifles, it will change your mind. It's not quite as dominant as the year one fusion rifles that used to be killing people from the opposite end of hallways, but it is up there in terms of very, very good weapons. Definitely grab one of those. And I think, Kit, you had another fusion rifle, too, that you wanted to talk about, albeit an exotic one, right?
That's absolutely right, and I think you just you gave it away to our more savvy listeners or those people who've been around for a little bit. That's the Plan C.
Oh.
Yeah, Telesto is the besto. It is. I will say that.
It's better than the resto.
Every time. So Plan C, though, is really what I want to talk about here. Telesto is super fun, but it is not really a great gun for fighting the meta or for going on crazy kill sprees against players of decent skill. Plan C, though, will wreck some fools. I have seen that gun do ridiculous, ridiculous things in the Crucible. Actually, one of the sets of scrim matches I was playing this weekend, somebody who shall remain nameless because I'm blanking on his name, or I would give him credit, he destroyed everybody with his Plan C. It was just dumb. It was unfair. It's incredible. So the Plan C, if you don't know how it works, you put it away and you wait, like 3 seconds, I think. And then you take it out and you pull the trigger and it fires almost instantly. It charges in a fraction of a second rather than the normal, delayed charge time with a fusion rifle. But then it fires, with that same effective range as any other fusion rifle. And stat-wise, the Plan C is really solid. So being able to get that near-instant charge and being able to do it over and over and over again is just ridiculous. So the Plan C, 52 range, 50 stability. So really, really solid stats right there. Aim assist is decent. The recoil direction is actually almost straight up, so it's really easy to just, aim for the knees and rip somebody to shreds. So cannot recommend. If you hate shotguns, but you don't know how to fight them, Plan C. Plan C every time. I got a double kill with the Plan C in Iron Banner with one shot, so it's stupid.
Do you remember when that used to be a bounty way back in year one? That you had to get double kills with single fusion rifle burst.
Vanguard bounty.
Oh my god, that was brutal.
Always go to we've woken the hive.
Yeah, you just woke the hive.
But if you actually think about it, like without trying to farm that, just trying to do that in normal gameplay.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why they ever thought that would be an easy daily bounty for people to finish.
Well, I take it back. There's actually I don't know if this still works, but in the first patrol zone in the Cosmodrome. If you go into the building and that's kind of off to your right, and you kill everybody there, and then you go down to where there's kind of those shipping containers, you kill everybody there, and you come up back up to the building and go down into the basement, you can force it to spawn like a whole ton of guys. And so if you ever had bounties to farm, that was like the second best, after waking the hive, that was the other place you could go. And it was actually faster because you didn't have to... I wouldn't say it was faster because you just die. But if you needed to stay alive for some reason, you can go and farm stuff there. Or you just wanted to change your pace. So, but yeah, you're right. You had to farm it. It was ridiculous.
By the way, that was a great tip that you said, aiming for the knees. That's something that a lot of people don't necessarily think of when using fusion rifles. Just to throw this out there as a helpful trick. People have a tendency to aim for like the chest, neck, chin area with these guns because that's what you have to do for the majority of weapons to get headshots. But with fusion rifles, you don't want to aim that high because the recoil is going to carry you off of their body. Number one, you're shooting at a smaller target when you're shooting at the head, and the bolt spread of the fusion rifles means you're not going to land that many bolts. You want to aim for the knees, for the nuts, depending on how much stability your fusion rifle has, and let the recoil carry you up through center mass. That way you're aiming at a bigger, wider target. It doesn't matter if you hit their head or not. You don't need to care about that. You want to land all those bolts center mass. And the easiest way to do that is aim low for the first couple and then let it walk up. That's just a little tip out there for those of you who may be new to fusion rifles, don't know too much.
Yeah, when you use a fusion rifle, you want to work with it, not against it.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of carrying that on. One thing to note about fusion rifles is every single one's going to have a little bit different recoil pattern from all of the others. So you really want to kind of pick one that has great stats and that you're comfortable with and just kind of roll with that and get used to learning the angles that it recoils at and kind of the pattern. And if you practice with it, that's the way to get good. with the fusion rifle. Plan C is a fantastic place to start because the exotic perk is just stupidly powerful, and it makes it a fusion rifle slash shotgun. Saladin's Vigil is fantastic. The Omalon Thazon from the Gunsmith is fantastic. There are a few other great fusion rifles out there. Those are the ones that come to mind. Sure, yeah, there you go. So pick one of those that has those good base stats, and if you spend enough time with it, you'll get comfortable with it and you'll start to figure it out. Adding on to what you said, Mercules, too, I just wanted to say I always aim for the knees, regardless of the stability, because it's easier to land those final bolts on the body than the head. So you never want to, since there's no precision damage, doesn't happen with fusion rifles. It's not a thing. So your objective is just to make your target as big as possible at all times. So you know, even if you don't want to aim for the toes because you don't want to shoot the ground, right? But aim for the knees and just you know, try to land as many bolts on the body as you can, and you'll get those kills. So I guess other off-meta weapons, I had two others that I had in mind to mention as far as special weapons go. Did you guys, I just talked a whole lot, did you guys want to throw any others out there specifically that you had in mind?
I have an off-meta shotgun for everybody to give a shot if they can complete the quest. I'm talking about the Chaperone, Destiny's Ooh. Only slug shotgun. I was just thinking about it because I've been running it for a couple of days now with my hunter. It's very nice to kind of kick back with a chaperone and work on your aiming ability. What makes the chaperone special is that, like I said, it is a slug-based shotgun, which means it fires a single projectile instead of the 12 to 13 pellet spread of other shotguns. Chaperone has a unique precision damage modifier. Regular shotgun precision damage modifier, I believe, is in the 1.1 to 1.2 range. The Chaperone has a 1.75 The Chaperone has a 1.75 precision damage modifier. So if you can land your headshots, the Chaperone has a pretty decent amount of range. It is just short of something like a max range Matador or Party Crasher, but it is a fun weapon to go and play a little differently with. With Field Scout, you spawn in with 14 shells, which is more than enough to get to your first special ammo box.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah, it works excellently with the No Backup Plan Defender. I guess the only real drawback is that you can't use the Monte Carlo with it, which would be pretty overpowered. That would be ridiculously overpowered. Yeah, I just wanted to throw the Chaperone out there. It's got a brutal quest to get it. It's not as good as a perfect Party Crasher or Matador, but it is a fun weapon to fall back on, and it does have the advantage of double the starting ammo.
Well, so I guess I had just something to mention about the quest as far as getting it done, because a lot of people do struggle with it. So I'll just run with that for a second, and then happy to pass the speaking stick off. So the quest for the Chaperone, there's a Crucible Kills section that is pretty tough for a lot of people, and you know, we've got this, you know, these private matches, right? And those don't work for quests, right? You can't go get your quests done in private matches. But you can actually still force matchmaking if you have five friends, or say you can find five random people on the 100 or your LFG of choice. And that still counts for quests. So, you know, don't forget, we you know, that is something that you can do. There's almost nobody doing it anymore. So if you can find those old legacy playlists and there's not a whole lot of people in there, it's probably going to be easier than it ever was to force matchmaking. So just want to throw that one back out there, that little tip.
Another tip for completing that last word section of the quest, you get 3 percentage points towards your total for every win every match you win with the last word equipped. So you can always throw on your last word at the end of a match and get that guaranteed 3 percentage points. However, with Sparrow Racing League potentially coming back, keep an eye out for that, because the last time we had Sparrow Racing League, you got a guaranteed 3% no matter what you placed, as long as you had the last word equipped, meaning you could run 34 Sparrow races, which is a whole hell of a lot. But still, it's going to be easier for some people to do that rather than the almost RNG of finishing this quest through playing with the last word. So keep that in mind if we do see SRL come back.
Yeah, it's a couple of great options there. Either, you know, SRL, if you have to have the patience, you want to wait it out, or if you've got some people and a little bit of time, forcing matchmaking. So a couple ways to get it done real fast. Mercules, did you have anything else to say about the Chaperone, or did you want to move us forward?
No, Chaperone is just another one of those weapons that's very much like the No Land Beyond. It's a really difficult gun to use. It has a pretty low floor, pretty high ceiling, and unfortunately they did nerf it a tiny bit, which was kind of unneeded in my opinion. It's not like it was the best gun out there to begin with, and it used to be the range was better than a God Rolled Matador Party Crasher, and now it's not, which I felt like it should be, because if you can kill someone with one burst of the body from farther away with a Matador, then why would you use a Chaperone?
But right.
The reason why you use a Chaperone is because it's badass, and it's incredible to, you know, snipe someone in the head with a slug-throwing shotgun, basically. It doesn't even really function like a shotgun when you look at it.
Yeah.
Because it's a slug-thrower, it's more like a close-range sniper rifle than it is a shotgun, because you do have to aim for that. Critical points matter. So I like the Chaperone. Unfortunately, I don't think it's in a good position right now, but, you know, that's just the way things go, I guess. But moving on to, I believe, one of the last things we're going to talk about. I know you've got something else to say, but sidearms. There's a few of them out there. They added some new archetypes in with Rise of Iron. I got to say, I don't really like the low-impact archetype, the Impeacher 5 and the Anton's Rule. They take all crits to kill in their optimal time to kill, which, although it is fast, it is basically impossible to hit that optimal time to kill. You just cannot pull the trigger fast enough. The stability is okay, but even okay on a sidearm is not great. I'm just not really a huge fan of them. My favorite out of all of these, you know, it's not even one of the legendary ones. I like the Trespasser a lot. I think the Trespasser is a really cool gun. It's a fun gun. It is a burst weapon, but it has the ability to kill in two bursts, which means you will be able to take down a charging shotgunner. The optimal time to kill is actually right up there with the last word in terms of how fast it is. It is really, really great. And if you want to try something different, but still a little bit the same, remove the last word, put on a pulse rifle or a scout rifle for your primary, switch to the Trespasser for your exotic secondary, and just melt people as they charge you with shotguns. Almost no one ever expects it. It's not an easy gun to use. That 6-round burst, while you think it would be amazing, it's its version of reactive reload, basically. Get a kill, reload, it fires the next two bursts one after the other with no burst delay in between it, which is awesome until you think about the fact that if you miss that burst, you're stuck firing 6 shots off, probably into nothing but a wall or the ground or something. So it is a little bit difficult to use, but I love the Trespasser a lot.
I don't really have anything to add about the Trespasser. I've not really given it a fair shake, I guess, at this point, and maybe that's something I need to change. I think it's been my last two exotic specials have both been the Trespasser, so maybe the universe is telling me that it's time to break it out and really give it a thorough run through its paces.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as Kit for that. I don't really use the Trespasser. I did want to point out, don't sleep on the Crow's Eye, another House of Judgment rank-up weapon. This one can roll barrel mods that increase the damage, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it can get an optimal time to kill with 4 body shots, or is it 5? I think it's 4.
It's 4. It's optimal time to kill would be 4 body shots if you're using something like Linear Compensator, Accurized Ballistics, or something like that.
Yep, that puts it at 0.7 seconds with all body shots.
It packs a punch.
Yeah, it basically means you don't need to hit a headshot and you still get the optimal time to kill. It's 4 shots no matter what you do, and it's hit scan, which is great because some of the other ones, like the Queen's Choice, the Vestian Dynasty, not hitscan. Kind of difficult to use. They have travel time. I remember testing it out, shooting them at dregs in the Cosmodrome, and it took like 10 frames to hit a dreg that was 50 meters away or something like that. I don't know the exact number, so I don't want you to quote me on that, but it was really bad. It was like amazing to me how long it actually took for the projectiles to travel. And you can see why it's really easy for people to get out of the way of them and therefore really hard for you to learn how to use them. So yeah, the Crow's Eye is definitely probably one of the best legendary, one of the best legendary sidearms out there. The Wormwood, which is a future War Cult vendor one, is also pretty decent. You're not going to be able to get that super fast body shot time to kill, but in general, it's got a faster optimal time to kill. 0.6 seconds is compared to 0.7. It's pretty easy to use. The only drawback to it is it's got a 12 magazine size instead of 15. So those are some sidearms I like. I mean, I've been running the Wormwood the last, I don't know, 5 days or something in the Crucible, and people don't suspect it. It's like people don't suspect that nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects a sidearm ever. You just almost never see him, basically. So it's been fun to run it. I was actually pairing up with the Waltz. I was trying to go with all FWC weapons while I finished my FWC exotic quest on my Hunter. So I had the Waltz, the Wormwood, and the Vertigo in the Crucible for the last week getting it done. And it's fun to try new things. You know, that's part of what makes the game of Destiny so enjoyable is the variety. And limiting yourself to just one loadout has never been the type of person I want to be. I want to try every different little thing, and you know, I enjoyed it a lot. So I don't have anything else to really talk about in terms of off meta. Do you guys have anything else to say?
I actually have two other special weapons I wanted to mention briefly. So I'll just run with those real quick, and I guess you guys can chime in on them. First off, we mentioned the Chaperone is an off-meta shotgun. One other shotgun I want to mention that is off-meta, just in terms of not getting used, is the Invective. And so the Invective, of course, is an exotic shotgun that regenerates ammo. I believe it's four rounds every 30 seconds, if I'm remembering the timing on that right. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. The Invective has range that is comparable to the high-impact shotguns, but it doesn't have quite the same damage output of them, of course, but it is also full auto, which means that if you want to, and final round, actually, come to think of it, so if you want to have a gun that's going to be really solid for shotgunning through groups of people, you want to not worry about picking up special ammo. And you also want to be able to just jump in there and drop any super in like half a second. The Invective is your Huckleberry. I mean, this thing will do it. I've taken down a Sunbreaker. He threw a hammer at a teammate. He didn't see me coming, and boom, 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 and no more Sunbreaker. So, you know, I've dropped Sunbreakers. I've dropped Blade Dancers. The gun is powerful. It does have, and like I said, it does not have the damage of those high impacts. You do have to get in a little bit closer. You do have to make sure that you're landing all of your pellets, but it's still a fun shotgun to play with. And then real quick before I pass off the mic here, Defiance of Yasmin, the King's Fall raid sniper, has the best. It's not a any kind of a high impact sniper. It's like a mid low, I guess, would be the archetype. So it cannot revive snipe, but it has stats as if it was a mid high impact in terms of aim assist, stability, range. It's the gun is built. It's stacked, and combine that with one of the lowest zoom scopes in the game. It's an excellent choice if you want to play with something that feels and looks very different from what other people are using. So that's what I'll add in there.
Yeah, it's a really cool sniper in terms of how open the sight is too. That's something that a lot of people don't necessarily care to notice or care about or notice on sniper rifles, but it's a really open sight picture, which makes it very, very easy to find a target, track a target. It's a low zoom scope, you know, fast two taps to the body. It's overall just a really great sniper. That whole archetype's pretty decent, but Defiance Yasm is probably one of the best. But I think that's basically it for episode 20. Hopefully we gave you guys some great suggestions on how to play, you know, with guns that maybe you haven't thought of playing with before, but they're not necessarily going to handicap you too bad. It might test your skills a little bit more than you're used to. Might not be the thing you want to take into Trials of Osiris on a tryhard run, but maybe you play some sixes, maybe play some Rift, some Clash, some Control, try out some of these weapons and just have a good time. You know, sample the fruits that Destiny has to offer, because there are a lot of guns in this game that are overlooked, undervalued, just altogether a little bit ignored because everyone wants to focus on the meta. And the meta is there, but the meta is not everything, you know? So these guns are going to be great without putting you in too deep of a hole, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Really hope you guys enjoyed. And I'm signing off. I'll see you guys next week. And thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Peace out.